How do you stop plans for a new housing subdivision near your property? Well, how about starting a hog operation right next to it? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Starting a hog lot right next to a proposed new housing development is exactly what some residents north of Iowa City are doing. And in the first half hour, we'll hear from both sides of the feud. Then in the second half hour, we'll take you inside a hog confinement to find out where your bacon comes from and hear pro and con voices concerning concentrated animal feeding operations, known as CAFOs. That's all coming up this hour after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later this hour, where your bacon comes from, your pork chops, your ham for that matter, we'll take you inside a hog confinement to hear about how hogs are raised. We'll take you there so you can see, so to speak. You know, radio gives you the best pictures, how the hogs are raised in this state. We'll also hear pro and con voices concerning what you may have heard called CAFOs. These are called CAFOs, and that stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations. But first, this first half hour, a particularly interesting controversy involving hogs that sounds like it may come right out of a movie script. Some residents in a rural part of Johnson County, north of Iowa City, say they plan to start a small hog operation with the hope that it will possibly stop plans for a housing subdivision nearby. And joining us this half hour to tell the story, some of the participants in it, Janelle Rettig is with us. She's chair of the Board of Johnson County Supervisors. Janelle, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Alisa Meggett is a neighbor and a local land use advocate, also a global studies teacher at a local junior high. Alisa, welcome.
Thank you.
And Lori Tulchin is with us, a neighbor involved in forming the LLC that starts the hog operation. Lori, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Joining us by phone, Jim Sedlacek. He is the owner of the property where the hog facility is planned to be. Jim, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you for all being on board. Let me try to start at the beginning of this story, and I think for our purposes, perhaps it starts with the decision to rezone this. So let me start with you, Janelle Rettig, of the Johnson County Supervisors. What prompted the rezoning of this land from what to what? From agriculture to what is, I think, called rural cluster?
The landowner attempted to sell her land privately and didn't find any buyers, and then put it on the market, didn't find any buyers. Made an arrangement with a local real estate agent, and they came to planning and zoning, the husband and wife who owned the land and the real estate agent looking to rezone their land for development of a rural cluster subdivision, which has been a type of subdivision that's been targeted in the North Corridor since the 90s.
Okay, so here you have a couple with some farmland. They can't sell it. They're unable to sell it as agricultural land as it's zoned. And the worth changes when it's rezoned to this cluster.
They wouldn't have necessarily had to have tried to sell it, but it's just a fact that they did.
Okay, they saw an opportunity there. And so you at the Johnson County Board of Supervisors did what with that rezoning request?
Well, this piece of property is in what we call our North Corridor Development Plan. That original land use plan exists from 1979. It's always been targeted for development since 1979. So when the application came before planning and zoning, their commission, their chair was unable to vote because of advice of the county attorney. So there were only four members there, and it was a 2-2 vote. Their advisory to the Board of Supervisors, and then it came before the Board of Supervisors to rezone it from agriculture to rural cluster.
Mm-hmm. And it eventually did, and that vote was?
Four to one.
4-1. Okay. So let's pick up with the group that is opposed to this rezoning. Let me go to you first. Lori Tulchin, you're involved in forming the LLC to start this hog operation. When did it first appear on your radar that something's happening that you didn't want to happen in your neighborhood?
Well, we started following the rezoning. We saw a rezoning sign up. We attended the public hearing. We got a lot of people at the meeting, and most of us were sitting outside. I mean, it was packed. The room was packed. And frankly, we didn't really expect the rezoning to be approved since we couldn't see a compelling need.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, over 1,000 lots available in that area for sale that were already zoned and platted. And we couldn't see any reason to destroy a farm for a housing development when clearly the absorption rate is about 50 to 60 lots a year. So we attended the meeting, but it passed.
Okay. Alyssa Meggett, anything to add to that story?
Yeah, I think that this land it's really important land, and I do acknowledge that it wasn't sold. And the part that I'd like to clarify is that it was selling for $16,000 an acre, and it was zoned agriculture. My husband and I looked at it. We couldn't afford an acre of it. And I think that people wanted to buy it. It was at Pentagon mm-hmm. prices.
Yeah, but okay, let me get the last voice here before we start doing some other questions here. Jim Sedlicek, you were the owner of the property where the hog facility is planned. How did it come into being? Where did the idea come from that a hog facility might be a good, should I say, weapon, prompter, way to change minds here?
Well, the idea, I think, kind of arose. I've raised hogs ever since I was a kid, so I'm not starting up anything, just adding another building to our operation. And it was the deal, I think, that the supervisor said, oh, this stuff all blends together out here, farmers and city people, and I've already dealt with some of the stuff, and I know it doesn't blend together. I've had people gripe at me about flies. They thought I owned all the flies out here. And people gripe if a cow gets out. They don't like racket. They don't like dust. And, you know, so we thought that maybe we'll see how things go here.
Mm-hmm. So you've got already have a hog facility. How many hogs?
Well, we down on our home plate. We had hogs up there. And a few years ago, we switched them back to the home place there, and we feed all probably 500-600 head a year out at the home place here.
But as I understand, this new hog facility is at a new location that they've never been a hog shed before, hog facility.
No, that's not true. There's been hogs on that farm. We just, some of the buildings got old, and so we're changing things around and updating, and so this will be a new building.
Mm-hmm. And how many hogs will be housed here?
Well, this building can house probably easy 500. We checked with the county. There's no restrictions on the number of hogs that can be on there. We have to, at 1,250 head, we have to have a manure management plan with the DNR. And so we can go. There really isn't anything, you know, it says how many hogs you can have as long as you follow the rules with the DNR.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alyssa Meggett, your hope here is, and the group of neighbors is what? That Jim's new hog facility will do what?
Well, I guess I want to establish that it is an agricultural area. Now, this farm that we've rezoned is surrounded by farms on all sides. It's all farmland. And we're talking about property rights, and I think Jim has, you know, as an ag, zoned ag, he's got the right to create a pig farm.
Mm-hmm. But it's not coincidental where he's putting it, is it? So what's the thinking behind that?
The thinking behind that is I think the supervisors have argued that with this rural cluster, it advocates the whole, you know, conflict between rural and residential development. And I guess this might put it to the test. And It's also like a friendly neighbor thing saying –
What about Janelle's point that this has been targeted for rezoning, possible residential area, since I think you said, Janelle, 1979?
It first appears in the county documents in 79 that the rural area is targeted as the only growth area in Johnson County it's mm-hmm. not good farm ground.
Okay, so anyone buying property since 1979 could have been made themselves aware of that.
Anybody who's purchased it since 1979 would have purchased property in the North Corridor knowing they had potential development rights, which – I think this makes this a very much a private property rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the county's had, I think it's 7 or 8 revisions of our land use plan in the North Corridor, and always this land, the Dooley property, was targeted as potential growth.
Mm-hmm. Lori Tolchin, you wanted to join us.
Well, the original mass rezoning in 1960 rezoned 10,000 acres of land, and Newport Road, where this farm is, was not included in the original mass rezoning. Later on, it was at...
Y'all
Later on, it was added.
Okay.
It was added, and then the growth area was increased all the way out to Solon and then reduced back again and shrunk back down again, and now Newport Road is in it. Now, the fact that an area is in the growth area does not any landowner living in the growth area certainly is entitled to request a rezoning. But, the landowner in this case bought a farm and basically is entitled to use it as a farm, and any change of use, they certainly have to get an approval. We certainly don't think an approval was in order in this case, considering the amount of inventory of developed, platted, zoned lots that are buildable.
Right, but isn't that a little bit like saying, if Iowa City is going to grow and thrive, it needs new housing, but in this case, NIMBY, not in my backyard?
Well, we can't control. I mean, the supervisors have to take responsibility for the 800 buildable platted lots that are already in the growth area. There's another 300 to 400 coming online in the growth area in 2013. And what we're hoping that our candidates do and our supervisors do, and this is what they run on, is smart growth. And we think they should support growth closer to the cities, and their policies should support that kind of development.
Okay. Join our discussion, your take on the Johnson County controversy we're describing in this first half hour, 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Janelle Rettig, chair of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors, you wanted to jump in here.
Well, Johnson County has one of the most conservation, environmental-oriented land use plans and unified development ordinances in the state and the country. It is very environmental conservation-oriented. Rural cluster subdivision is the most environmentally friendly subdivision that we have, is the most environmentally subdivision in the state right now that we're aware of. And people should have an expectation of private property rights. If you follow all of our rules, if you've met all of our requirements, the government should not block you from developing your land in the way that meets all the rules. And that's exactly what this landowner did. And every ordinance, every policy we've ever had. But it's easy to say we should make them more aggressive. But the candidate you supported, Lori, refused to do that just a few weeks ago when we tried to increase our sensitive areas ordinance. And it failed on a 2-3 vote with only Supervisor Sullivan and myself supporting it. And the other three were unwilling to make our sensitive areas ordinance more environmentally friendly. And so, land use plans have to get a majority of the votes.
I'd just like to respond to that. Those actions, that all comes into play during platting and subdivision applications. None of what was just said has anything to do with the decision that goes into rezoning a farm. The decision that goes into rezoning a farm has to be based on data-driven process. And what's really important is what need does it fill to destroy a farm for a housing development?
Okay, let me ask you this, Janelle Rettig. What is your position then on Jim Sedlicek, owner of the property, creating this hog facility, I believe, across the road from where the housing development, the subdivision, would be?
I think
Does Johnson County have a position on that?
No, we're not allowed to have a position because CAFOs are controlled by the state government, and he's going to put 500 head of hog on I don't know how many acres. But within a mile and a half, there's 540 homes there, which gets to almost the population of Tiffin a couple of years ago. And so it's about like putting a hog confinement near Tiffin. And, he has the legal right to do that, but this is the problem with state law, and I think our legislators really need to look at local siting of CAFOs. Mm-hmm. And it's not true that the Dooley farm is surrounded by farmland all the way around. There's 540 homes within a mile and a half of it.
We want to get to phones, but Jim Sedlicek, do you want to weigh in here? What do you hope to exact from this action? Do you really want to grow your hog operations there, or what would happen? What could happen to stop this?
Well, I guess if the farm stays as a farm, also the amount of houses that close. I didn't take account, but I think you'd have to go quite a ways to come up with that many houses. If you go out there, and stand out there and look around from one direction to the other direction, you're going to see about four or five houses, two or three farms, and you're going to see lots of wide open spaces.
How will your hog facility, 500-600 head of hog in that close proximity, impact this new residential area? Will they be able to smell it?
Well, I'm sure they will. You can smell livestock depending which way the wind blows, how the humidity is. You know, if you're moving manure, I'm sure it'll smell. Now, I don't know where the 500 head come from. I did not use that figure.
I'm sorry. What did you use?
I said I wasn't sure. We can go up to, you know, at least 1250.
Okay.
And,
Something below 1250. All right.
Yeah. So I did not use a 500 head. I'm not sure. We're going to get the thing started up here and see how things go, just like you do with any business, and then ramp things up from there.
Okay. Let's go to we're running out of time. Let's go to Colleen in Iowa City, who's been waiting. Colleen, are you in this area that we're talking about?
Well, I live out in the county.
Mm-hmm. Give us your view on this.
I commonly travel using Newport Road. I commonly travel out through Tiffin also. And I have issues that go long back to blocking road development and whatever for my safety and other people in the county. But my biggest issue as I'm listening to this is why on earth doesn't anyone bring up the fact that Lori Tulshin and Jim Glasgow are developers on their own. They own farmland that's already been platted for development out in Tiffin, but that's not a problem for them because they don't live out there. Other people live out there, but they're not outraged. That land in Tiffin has a higher CSR average than the land on Newport Road. 60s, I think, is what I see on the county website for the Newport Road land. 80s is what I see out there with the land they own that they have already platted for development.
Okay, I think we got the point. Colleen, we'll get a response from Lori, perhaps, and Jim as well. Lori?
When we bought that ground, it was zoned. It was platted. It's in the city limits. It's bordered by the school. And if we can't sell it, the school is going to buy it from us. And so there was no farm that was rezoned. When I purchased it, it already came with a platting. So this is within the city limits. Anybody who would move on into a home there would be able to walk to school. They wouldn't have to drive everywhere. It's within just blocks of services. It's got city water, city sewer. It's not 3 miles outside the city limit. It isn't surrounded by farms like the Dooley Farm. And I do want to say that the adjacent properties to the Dooley Farm, there's a 260-acre farm to the north, 110-acre farm to the east, 8 acres to the south, and 17 acres to the west. And so I just want to address what Janelle said in that it's not like putting a hog farm next to 560 homes. It's like dumping 760 homes in a rural area.
Okay. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, so to speak, here. We'll make sure that we're just dealing with kind of these trade-off issues. Lori Tulshin there. Jim Sedlicek, I understand you have to. Do you have to go, or did you want to get in a word response to our caller?
Well, basically, you know, we're out here in the country, and, you know, the supervisors have said that there was nothing they can do about this. First off, that CSR, whatever the number is, I don't remember it. But anyhow, that's not exactly right. That's been tampered with. The LISA score has been tampered with. And, you know, and this thing is, it probably, even though supervisors say not, will probably end up leading to rebuilding this road, which is going to cost the taxpayers a pile of money.
Okay. Let's go to Dave in Solon. Hi, Dave in Solon. Hi.
Hi. My comment pretty much echoes exactly what the previous caller said, and I'm going to single this out. Lori Tulshin's behavior, the entire group, but Lori and Jim Glasgow particularly, is reprehensible. They have attacked Sharon Dooley personally and economically, and she has done everything that she's allowed to do within the law. The property was for sale for 2 years. Nobody bought it. Mary Ferentz could have bought it. She is immediately adjacent to the back of this property and chose not to. So put up or shut up is the answer. Lori, this is karma. I would hope that every developer you do business with through Metro Plumbing decides to stop doing business.
Dave, thank you for your comment. We like to keep it respectful here as well. Sorry about that. Lori, would you like to respond?
I guess that was a little bit a little bit off the wall. I can just say that my friend Jim Sedlicek has been farming that land all along. He certainly wasn't aware that the farm was for sale. The only thing I ever saw for sale was 40 acres. If you can show me a listing for a 130-acre farm in the last 3 years, I would like to see that. I certainly never saw a listing, and there was never a realtor sign up.
We've got a couple minutes left. I want to ask if anybody has a remedy here. It looks like we're at an impasse. Alisa, Meggett?
Yeah, I think I'd like to see a couple things happen. First of all, I would like to get the county. I think the county argues with their own numbers, which is there's 1,600 available plots, you know, in the county and 800 in the North Corridor alone. I'd like them to get an accurate inventory, and I would be so thrilled to see a moratorium adopted to say, once we reach a certain threshold, then we're going to rezone more land because there is a need. But as long as there isn't a need, we're destroying a very sacred resource that we have in Iowa. And that's what I'm always trying to impress upon our supervisors is that in Iowa, we have 10% of the world's prime best farmland. And we're losing 26,000 acres of that every year.
Janelle Rettig, tell us, do you see a way out of this impasse?
You know, I think that the Johnson County has, while they're upset with us, we have the best zoning in the state. It can be better, but you have to have 3 votes to get that. And we certainly need the state legislature to deal with CAFOs so that you can have local control over siting CAFOs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to be talking about that in the next half hour, so set that up. What do you think needs to be addressed by the legislature specifically?
I think you need local control on siting CAFOs. I mean, hog confinements and control the confined animal operations, they impact neighbors. It's not as simple.
How would that affect this particular case?
You know, you have odors and smells, and there's no manure management plan required here, so you have water issues. You know, you have traffic problems because CAFOs require a lot of heavy equipment to move the animals and feed in mm-hmm. and out. I just wish we had local control on siting CAFOs. Beyond that, I think private property rights, you set your rules and you should follow your rules. And that's exactly what Sharon Dooley did here.
Okay. The farm in question being sold. Jim Sedlicek, if you're still there, when will your hog operation, the new site, be going into operation?
Well, the building is supposed to show up at the end of this week here, weather permitting, and we'll just put things together as soon as we can.
Okay. We'll see how this turns out. By the way, we did try to reach out to the developer for this. That person declined to comment on this issue, so we'll watch as it progresses. Jim Sedlicek, thank you for joining us by phone.
Thank you.
And in our studio, Lori Tolchin, Alisa Meggett, and Janelle Rettig of the Johnson County Board of Supervisors. Thank you all for giving us a picture of this controversy.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue actually talking about where our bacon comes from. In just a moment, our producer Ben Stanton will be here. He's going to tell us what it's like to be in a hog confinement. Find out also pro and con voices concerning what we've been mentioning, CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. We'd like to have your questions, your comments. Do you have concerns about CAFOs? Do you live near one? Do you raise hogs? Tell us your opinion. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News after this short break.
Support comes from Cafe Dodici in downtown Washington, offering dinner of international cuisine, specializing in Italian, nourishing the home of your soul. Open for Sunday brunch and dinner Wednesday to Sunday. Information at cafedodici.com.
Thank you so much for spending the noon hour with us here on River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and this half hour, we want to take you inside a hog confinement to find out where your bacon comes from, so to speak. I want to hear some pro and con voices concerning this acronym you may have heard, CAFO. CAFOs, that stands for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations. And what are they? Well, they are these agricultural operations where animals are kept and raised in more or less confined situations. Feed is brought to the animals, rather than the animals grazing or otherwise seeking feed in pastures in the fields or on a rangeland. We want to talk about those, but we want to get a feeling for where many, most of our hogs are raised. Iowa Public Radio producer Ben Stanton joins me now. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
It's Ben times two for
That's
the
right.
next few minutes. In thinking about this show, Ben, which you have been producing, we decided it's important to give listeners an idea, a picture of what goes on in a hog confinement. So, lucky you, you volunteered.
That's right.
To visit one and to share your experiences. Where did you go?
Well, we went to a farm that is west of the city of Washington in Washington County. That's about a half hour, 40 minutes south of Iowa City. And we were set up with an interview with Heidi Vitito, who's co-owner of JWV Pork there in Washington County. And the facility we went to is actually the building itself is not owned by JWV, but the hogs are. So we went to a facility that was about a 2,400 head operation, and so this is one of these long, white, skinny buildings you might see from the highway. In this case, you can see it from a county road, but it's a few hundred yards, I guess, away from that road, and running from east to west. And when we went there, there was a nice breeze blowing from the south, and the curtains were open, and you know, this wasn't my first time in a hog shed.
So the windows there is some air circulating.
There is air going through. Now, they don't do that all year round, but that wind blowing through really, there was a hog smell, okay? But it was not overwhelming, I guess I should say.
I understand that Heidi Vitito wanted to clear up what she thought were misconceptions people had about the operation.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, as you can imagine, there are people that are not comfortable with hog confinements, and she's well aware of that and wanted to give her perspective on that. And, of course, she also just wanted to impart her love of what she does.
Well, first of all, I'm proud to raise pigs. I love my job. I've been doing this for 32 years, and I honestly wouldn't pick a different life if I had it to do again, so I feel very fortunate that this is where God has put me. Second of all, as we were talking before, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what goes on in these hog buildings, because when pigs were outside, you drive by, you see pigs out in the barn lot or see them in a pasture, you perceive that you know what's going on and how they're treated. Once that we moved pigs into buildings, which was good for the environment actually, because pigs as rooting animals can be pretty destructive to soil. So by moving them inside, we did a better job of not creating erosion. When we moved them inside, these buildings typically have curtains on the side like this building does. And when these curtains go shut, then people seem to have kind of developed this suspicion that something sinister must be going on in there because I can't see them anymore. Well, in fact, the fact that you can't see them, if you want to see them, you should talk to one of your local farmers and say, hey, I want to understand better what goes on in there. But in the absence of that, I think that people conjure up a variety of visions, some of which are stimulated by people opposed to putting animals indoors. And so they start sort of filling their mind with images that are not correct.
Okay, Heidi Vitito there, Ben Stanton with me, visiting that JWV Pork 2400 head facility in Washington County. So you really got there right next to the hogs. You had them even nipping at you.
Yeah, that is the case. Yeah. They were very intimate with me, and maybe we could hear a little bit about. I thought we needed to hop the fence and get a chance to actually taste some hog feed.
No.
Yes.
Oh, let's listen to that.
Some people think this is kind of weird, but a lot of times when I'm walking the pens, that's what I do is I taste the feed, you know, to see if there's anything about it that makes me think, oh, this tastes a little bit too salty or it tastes flat or whatever. But for me, that's a part of my chore routine, but not everybody's willing to do that.
What's it taste like?
Here, do you want to taste some of it?
Yeah.
This doesn't have any medication. Just put a little on your tongue. I mean, it's not...
Maybe it's kind of like if you eat grits or something like that are dry or something. I don't know.
I don't know if you went and got like a box of bran off your shelf or a box of cornmeal which typically I wouldn't have a reason to taste dry like this. But, you know, it's pretty benign. And that's one of the tasks that we do in our farm, is that we grind all the corn that we buy from local producers and mix it with the bean meal, mix it with the distillers, mix it with the vitamins and minerals. Some of the diets have a little bit of fat added for extra energy. So, and salt, because again, you need salt, because a certain amount of salt is necessary as a flavorant, whether it's a pig or a person. So,
Heidi Vitito at the Hog Shed in Washington County. Interesting, Ben Stanton. Trying the situation that she tries the what she feeds the hogs, but of course what goes in has to come out.
That's right,
and
yes,
that's a big concern.
It is.
What about waste management? What did you pick up on there? Tell us how that's handled.
Well, sure. Well, these hogs are above slats. The slats go down to a manure pit. That manure is saved, and most of the time, what farmers are doing, they're hog farmers and they're crop farmers, and they're taking that manure and using it as fertilizer. And so the farmers I've spoken with say they want to save as much as that as possible. They find it valuable, and so they take care to make sure it stays in the ground. And other people have concern about that, as we'll hear in this next segment of the program.
Okay, Ben Stanton, thank you very much for visiting that hog confinement, giving us a little picture of where our bacon comes from.
Thank you, Ben.
And this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Exploring that very question, where our bacon comes from. My next two guests for the final part of the hour, Jamie Schmidt is with us. He's the president-elect of the Iowa Pork Producers Association, joining us by a phone, I believe. Jamie Schmidt, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being with us. Also, David Goodner is with us in our Des Moines studio. He's the farming and environment organizer for a group called Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. David, are you there?
I'm here, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for having the time to come into our studio today. Jamie Schmidt, let me talk to you a little bit about you got to listen into our little visit that Ben Stanton took to the hog confinement. Is this something that you run into again and again, that people have misconceptions about what goes on in these long buildings?
Well, sure. They're... The buildings are there to take care of the livestock, of the pigs, and maybe people, it's different than it was 50 years ago. Of course, what isn't different than what it was 50 years ago? And most people are three generations at least removed from the farm, so they just don't understand what's going on.
How do you decide, Jamie Schmidt, how is it decided where to put a CAFO, a confinement area?
Well, when most counties in the state of Iowa use what's called the master matrix. Now, there's a few counties that have elected not to use it, but most do. And when you do that, you go through a siting procedure. You look at what's surrounding the building, the proposed site. You look at what impact it may have on other people or waters or et cetera. And you fill out this master matrix, and then you decide if that's a good site or not. And just good neighbor relations, you take into consideration the people around you.
Okay, and the chief challenges that you face in these large operations, manure management?
Well,
or the smell, or both?
The manure management, we inject everything that comes out of the building into the ground where, in the early 70s, before we started having confinement barns, most of that manure was spread on top and was more subject to maybe running off in a heavy rain or something like that, where now we mix it into the ground right away. We grid sample all the land in 5-acre grids. Then you write a prescription as to how much manure you should spread on each one of these grids, so you get the maximum benefit of the manure for the next season's crop.
Mm-hmm. Jamie Schmidt, hold on. I want to reach out to our listeners. If you have concerns about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, do you live near one? Perhaps you raise hogs and want to join our conversation. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us at IPR Talk or post something on our Facebook page. David Goodner in our Des Moines studio, farming and environment organizer for Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. What are you and your group's chief concerns when it comes to what we've heard described here, the CAFOs?
thanks for asking, Ben. So Iowa CCI has 3,200 members in all 99 counties. And despite what the industry, you know, kind of propaganda campaign says, these are people that are directly impacted by factory farm pollution. They're family farmers. They've lived in rural communities. And every single one of them will tell you that factory farms pollute the air and the water, threaten public health, destroy property values and the rural economy, and run family farmers out of business. You know, there was a time when Iowa raised 15 million hogs on 80,000 small hog farms. Today, we're raising 21 million hogs on 6,000 giant factory farms.
Can you be more specific, David, about the impact that you say your members are find intolerable?
Well, let's take our board president, Lori Nelson, from Bayard, Iowa. She's surrounded by 5,000 corporate hogs. They spread manure right up to her fence post. She's a prisoner in her own home. She can't enjoy, you know, the sweet country life. She raises horses and, you know, other livestock. She has some sheep, and they've got breathing problems. She can't race her horses like she wants to, and daily has to live with these unaccountable out-of-state corporations coming in and ruining her quality of life.
Mm-hmm. David Goodner, what would you propose as a remedy here or a step in the right direction as far as your group is concerned?
Two major things. Number one is local control. Right now, people have little say or little voice in the decisions that impact their lives, and they really should have the right to say no. That's what local control means. It's grassroots democracy, and people like Heidi Vitito and the Iowa pork producers, you know, are afraid of democracy because they oppose local control at the state level. The second thing we need to realize is that there are alternatives out there. You know, Nyman Ranch is proving that a beginning hog farmer can raise 100 head free-range organic hogs in hoop houses. They have access to the outdoors. They're not being pumped full of antibiotics, which is creating superbugs resistant to modern medicine, and they can make a profit on it. So This idea that there's only one option out there is just not true.
Okay, David Goodner, stand by. I want to go back to Jamie Schmidt and then back to our phones. Our phone bank rapidly populated on this topic. Jamie Schmidt, answer the questions, the concerns that David Goodner's group represents, making some life, it sounds like, intolerable out on the rural areas.
Well, the misconception that it's corporate hogs out of state. I have lived on this farm for 55 years. I have been raising hogs here the whole time. We have a farrow to finish operation. The hogs are owned by us. The buildings are owned by us. The feed is ground by us. The manure is hauled by us.
What about the impact, though, that your hog operation may have on your neighbor, the quality of life of your neighbor?
Well, you haul manure maybe 3 days out of the year, out of one of these buildings. So it's not like you're doing it every day. So, sure, everybody will admit that there's a slight odor when you haul some manure. But it's not all the time. It's not something we watch when we do it. We watch wind direction. You know, we try to be good neighbors. And when everybody says that all hog production in Iowa is by out-of-state corporations, that's not correct. Majority of production in Iowa is by Iowans that own their own hogs.
Okay, let's go to a few calls. Gary is joining us from David from Davis County. Gary, you're on. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm one of those people that's impacted by this industry. I've got 20,000 hogs within 4 miles of my house, and I get stench from it on a regular basis. The roads and bridges in my area are pretty much destroyed. We can't hardly get up and down the roads when the weather's bad. I've got environmentally induced asthma, and there's nothing in my environment other than the hogs that could induce the asthma. I go to a state certified pulmonologist. He says he gets people in his office every day that work in or live near hog confinements, but you cannot prove beyond a doubt that that's what causes the problem.
Gary, have you? I'm sorry to hear about your symptoms. Have you taken any steps? Talked with Davis County officials?
Oh, the Davis County officials are like the officials everywhere. They're hand in glove with the pork producers and the Farm Bureau. They're paid off on a regular basis, and they do whatever the industry wants them to do. They do not care about their local citizens. They can't get elected to anything in our county or any place in Iowa, as far as I know, without the approval of the Farm Bureau. And the Farm Bureau is staunchly behind pork producers, which are staunchly behind these
CAFOs, which are, in my opinion, an abomination on a biblical scale. We've got thousands and thousands of Iowans affected by these things every day, and nothing is being done by our elected officials.
Gary, we're running short of time. Thank you for your view. From Davis County, I want to get to you, Jamie Schmidt. Don't worry. Larry, is it from Rhodes?
Yes.
Okay, Rhodes. What part of the state is that?
That's in Central Park, Marshall County.
Okay, give us your view quickly. We're ending the hour.
I used to raise hogs. I had about 60 sows. They ran out on pasture. I had feedlots. I had farrowing stalls, but I turned them out morning and night. I used straw. I rotated my crops. I had extra pasture to put or hay ground to haul my manure through the summer. And I had rotated my crops. You don't have that kind of system now anymore. You just have corn and beans. And I might ask the guest, why is it that we've had over 700 manure spills in this state, and we've got 600 and some, around 650 polluted waters now since 1995?
Okay.
When the CAFOs came in.
Let's get an answer to that question. Larry, thank you for that. The last two callers with some serious concerns, one personally impacted there. Jamie Schmidt, respond to those concerns. Someone claiming his health directly affected by these.
I do not know the person personally, so I cannot comment on his health.
Do you think that this is most pork producers, as you say, trying to be good neighbors, but that there are a few bad apples, so to speak, that are not considerate? Is that the case?
I'll say that most everybody tries to be a good neighbor.
Okay.
The next caller was talking about manure spills. Sure, there have been some manure spills, but since 2006, there's only been 60 reported, which is, we're improving. We continually try to improve our systems, do a better job. When the manure was spread on top of the ground, on top of the hay ground, what happened when you had a heavy rain? It probably washed off into the creek. Well, now we inject all that manure, reduce the odor, and keep it where it's supposed to be. So we're doing a better job all the time at what we're doing. Everybody tries to do better this year than what they did last year. That's just human nature.
Okay, what is your reaction to, and I'll get to you, David Goodner, I know we're coming up on the end, to legislation that would change local control, Jamie Schmidt?
Well, we have the master matrix system, which gives everybody a chance to try to do their best job that they can by citing, by looking at that matrix and trying to consider all the points of it,
mm-hmm.
and then make them use that for a tool to cite the buildings. And you kind of have a something that you can work with as a producer, so you know what you're what you need to look at.
David Goodner, I want you in back on this conversation. Tell us a little bit about the alternative. Paint a picture of what you think could be that isn't right now.
Well, like I said, I think Nyman Ranch producers are kind of paving the way. They've got max 100 head of hog in outdoor hoop barns, doing things the right way, environmentally sustainable family farm agriculture. I think the two things that I really wanted to address that Jamie brought up that I just don't think are true. Number one, most of the hogs in Iowa are corporately owned. In 1995, Governor Branstad passed a bill into law that allowed corporate ownership of hogs, and that's when the factory farm industry really came into the state of Iowa and started taking over. It's Cargill, Smithfield, Prestige Farms, these giant out-of-state corporations that pay no income taxes and get a lot of other subsidies coming in and running roughshod over the people of Iowa. Number two, I really disagree with the claim that the industry is doing better. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was here in Iowa last summer. They issued a scathing report saying that factory farm pollution was damaging Iowa's water quality, and they're looking at, bringing some pretty tough Clean Water Act enforcement back to the state of Iowa for the first time in a long time.
Jamie Schmidt, I want to give you the final word here. As I look at my computer screen and see the phone callers who will not be able to participate because we have a lack of time, there is a considerable amount of opposition that you face from Iowans. What do you think you need to do now? You're president-elect of the Iowa Pork Producers Association. Is this time for a different strategy?
I think we need a educational strategy to let people know that we're working with EPA, DNR. I met with them a couple weeks ago looking at the nutrient reduction strategy that Ag Secretary Bill Northey, introduced. It's a strategy that other states are looking at. It's a leading landmark type of piece of legislation that we'll work with and try to improve the environment. And I think what we need to do is keep telling people, informing people how we're trying to make improvements and do it.
Jamie Schmidt, we've run out of time. President-elect of the Iowa Pork Producers Association. You've raised hogs for 35 years near Garner, Iowa. Thank you, Jamie, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, David Goodner, for coming into our Des Moines studio, farming and environment organizer for Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. David, thank you.
Thanks so much, Ben.
And River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. Coming up tomorrow, of course, Politics Wednesday. We'll be talking about the tragedy in Boston, the political side of that. We hope you'll join us. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.